Session number 9005 to Jeremy or John Black, Reel 1.
Should I say who I am? Jeremy Black.
Thank you very much. Did you have a naval background at all?
Very indirectly. I have a forebear on my mother's side who was one of Nelson's captains at the Nile, and in fact fell in command of the Majestic at the battle. So to that extent, yes. My mother's family owned a shipping line in Plymouth, a very small shipping line, about which a book has been written subsequently. So that I had connection with the sea through that side, although it was somewhat indirect because my mother was the youngest of 13, so it had all rather slipped away by then. And my father was at sea in Sale, went to sea in 1908, and retired, in fact, or left the sea before I was born, but all his early days were at sea, and I was the last of my family, so he left the sea, I suppose, in about 1929 or something like that. Yes, he was in the Eastern Telegraph Company most of his life. But the sea was about, and I was brought up in Plymouth, and I lived through the war in Plymouth, so I suppose, and it was all there, really.
You went to what? You went to public school?
I went to Dartmouth.
Went to Dartmouth. You went
at 13.
At 13, yes.
Yeah.
This was from prep school?
Yes, I went to prep school in the middle of Dartmoor, Two Bridges. It was an evacuated school during the war. And I went there at 13, as you say, to Dartmouth, which at the time was up in the north. It was evacuated also. And to Chester. And in my second term, we came back to Dartmouth, and the rest of the time was there. So I had never desired to do anything else. From the earliest age, I had any difficulty knowing what I wanted to do. I just always wanted to join the Navy, for whatever reason.
No question, therefore, of executive or anything else. It was this one.
Oh, actually, none at all. No. I thought in terms of commanding ships, I think. And whilst not being totally disinterested in things like engineering, it never appealed to me the thought of being in a support element, if you understand me. I always wanted to be on the command side.
Now, what number of your contemporaries are ex Dartmouth? Well, I thought of people who came.
What, who are still serving?
No, I mean, at
that time.
Level that you are, I mean, the people who. Yeah. I'm not saying to compete with, but you know, who are sort of immediately with around are the majority of those ex Dartmouth, or have you forgotten this, really?
Oh, yes, I don't think anybody would be conscious nowadays of where they had originated in those terms. But obviously, quite a lot of them are, yes. I joined with 45. 45 of us joined in the summer term of 1946, I think it was. And of that 45, only a handful, maybe 3, 4 still serving. We had quite a lot more up till last year. Our 50th birthday came last year, and a lieutenant commander could not go on serving, so we had quite an exodus of maybe 5 last year. And now we're down to very few.
Coming in your level or not?
No, they first came in the term below. Very good indeed, that first bunch. But we were the last purebred 13 entry.
So you presumably went to the Devonshire?
Yes.
Devonshire then?
Devonshire, yes. Yeah. Yes, I won the King's Sword out of the Devonshire. For reasons which I'm not quite sure.
And then to?
Then that was 1950. I then went to the Belfast as a midshipman during the Korean War. No, wait a minute. I went out from the United Kingdom in the Warrior as a troop ship. I joined the Unicorn, which was an aircraft repair ship. It looked like an aircraft carrier with two hangars, one over the other. And I was in her for about 3 months of sheer misery. And then we transferred to the Belfast, which was at the time operating virtually exclusively off the west coast of Korea. And there I stayed for most of a year. In the course of that year, we went down to Singapore and refitted. And during that time, we midshipmen went up and walked around the jungle with the Royal Marines, 4-2 Commando, because that was the Malayan emergency. And then back we came to Korea again. And then after our, whatever it was, 15 months perhaps, total midshipman's time, we then took our midshipman's board for lieutenant, and having passed that, we then did a further 3 months as acting sub-lieutenants in destroyers. I actually went to the Concord, and we went on serving then on the East Coast mainly. Which was very interesting indeed. We got hit one afternoon, we were shelled quite badly, and I captured some prisoners
from
shore batteries. Yes, we were in bombarding some trains in Songjin off the East Coast. We saw two trains. It was the policy at the time to try and stop communication, and we'd throttled sea traffic, and the trains in Korea run down the coastal strip, there being no other possibility. So we lay off the holes in the tunnels and tried to knock the trains off the rails. And one afternoon we came in there, and there were two trains in the station, which was a great opportunity. So we fired away at them, and hardly had we started, but suddenly a whole lot of batteries opened up on us. And there were shells everywhere. In the end, one of them hit Y gun and killed a few people. So we pulled out, discretion being the better part of valor. And another morning I went in and captured some fishermen, because that was another part, to try and throttle their protein, their fish trade. And so I was wakened very early one morning and sent in with the dawn in a motorboat to half a mile off the coast, I suppose, and I captured a lot of fishermen and brought them back. That was all rather exciting for a 17-year-old.
What do you do with the fishermen?
We landed them on an island. You see, we owned all the islands at that time, up and down both coasts, and usually, or typically, there would be an American bird colonel and a few South Korean troops stationed. Sometimes these islands were within walking distance of the shore. I mean, at low tide, you could walk across. They were very close indeed. And they remained in our hands for a number of years, until the talk started at Pyongyang, if you remember.
Panmunjom, I thought.
Could have been. And when the talk started, the islands became a bargaining counter. So the North Koreans, for the first time, came interested in these islands. And then it all came much more difficult, so we decided to patrol between the islands and the shore. And I did that for a while also in an American landing craft. I was transferred to an American landing ship for quite a short time. And we drove their little landing craft in and out these islands at night, lest the North Koreans should try and capture them.
How far north was this?
North of the
line,
whatever it was. Something parallel, wasn't it?
49,
was it? Whatever it was. Yes. So that was another little excitement.
Obviously it was, I suppose, important for your future career that you should have been fortunate enough to have had that particular task. Are these things really a matter of luck, or does the great wisdom of the Admiralty decide that here's the future Admiral and give them the job to do?
Yeah. Not so clever, I think. As I remember it, out of the training cruiser, you were allowed to opt for groups of friends with whom you'd like to serve as midshipmen. And of course, we went off to gunrooms, whether in groups of so many, and I went off with a team of half a dozen, I suppose, friends. And now I couldn't tell you how we came to get that particular appointment, but it was a jolly good one, as you can imagine. I mean, we grew up quite a lot, if you imagine. It'd be just like the age of leaving here. And suddenly there you are, traipsing through the jungle, or whatever. Very good experience, actually. And not too dangerous, which was quite nice also. I mean, you know, I learned a lot with that, actually. And none of our number were killed. I think most ships were hit at one time or another, and there were a few casualties, but not many.
Then you came back to do courses with them?
Back to Greenwich.
Yeah.
That was the first course. And then, yes, then courses. Yeah.
It must have, one of the things one hears about is how very flat it's all is, particularly if you've actually been doing something positive.
Yeah. Coming back, I remember the first thing they did on the first day at Greenwich, which was an entirely academic course, was to have an exam, you know, mechanics and maths and things. And we'd, after all, only been away from it for maybe less than 2 years. And I remember sitting that morning looking at these quadratic equations and things and knowing that I could have done them without turning a hair and yet simply not having an idea. I mean, it was hopeless. I couldn't do it. Just cold like that, I simply couldn't do them. Although they'd been meat and drink only that short time before. Not that it was far below the surface. I think, you know, a little bit of scratching about it would have come. If I'd had a day's preparation, I'm sure that would have been fine. But in fact, we didn't. We had none in it. And I couldn't do any of it. But actually, at that time, I had mentally decided to turn away from the sciences. I think at Dartmouth, my main thrust was really in the sciences. Not too starkly, but nevertheless. And I decided at Dartmouth, at Greenwich, to go in for other things. History, art, well, not drawing, but history of art and that sort of thing. And architecture in terms of appreciation. And those sort of things, and rather to turn aside the mathematics. I couldn't see at that stage learning a bit more mechanics was going to help me one way or another.
The criticism of the particular system, the Dartmouth system, was, and the reason why it's got rid of, was that the product was very narrow in their interest, because they simply haven't had the opportunity to do the history of the art and this kind of thing.
All right, so I don't think...
Were you conscious of that?
No, and nor would I accept it. Absolutely rejected. I mean, I think Dartmouth was an excellent school with outstanding facilities, far better than any public school, without a shadow of doubt. And I would reject the argument that it was narrow. It was politically unacceptable, and I believe that's why it went, really. It was politically unacceptable to get chaps at the tender age of 13 and have a contract which ran forever, which was the way it was, and I think that's why it went. I personally have never seen reason to object to it. I think it possibly would have been ethically better if it had been easier to get out for those who wanted to. But in very much as the rest of the Navy at that time, you know, you had a contract and you ran, like sailors had their 12 years, and whatever they thought, they were held grimly. And likewise, rather, with these young officers. Apart from that, I personally see no objection whatsoever to the system. It seems to me that it is much better that a chap has an enthusiasm and pursues it as long as he enjoys it, rather than, say, many people I meet now, I'm midshipmen and so on, who come in via their university and you meet them at 23, 24, they're still not quite sure what they want to do, and they're still fiddling about. And I think if I've rarely learnt anything from this last period in Invincible with 140 young officers, that I shall try and make sure that Simon and his brother make up their mind to do something and put their head down and go. Because it seems to me that the people who come out on top at the end are those who got in there and went. And other people who fiddle about and take years off and think about it and change a few times, for most occupations, leaving aside an entrepreneur or something like that, but for most occupations, they are just behind the rest when finally they decide what they want to do. They've just lost years. And certainly in the Navy, that may well mean you can't catch them up. And I suspect that happens in banking or Shell or a lot of other good things too, myself.
Yes, I think it's true, actually. There are quite a number, particularly in banking, which they even said that they don't want university people.
Yeah. But I've noticed it starkly. You see, because I've had the chaps at the other end of it, who's age 29, 32, have decided, having sampled the thing, that the Navy is for them. And alas, they've then missed a trick. They're on the wrong list, or they haven't got the right exams, or, I mean, they're just behind. Yeah. And as like as not, they can't ever catch it up. I think that's tragic.
Where are the future admirals going to come, then? Because, I mean, if you've done, I mean, particularly the flying people, they tend to be really a bit older, don't they, at their promotion for promotion?
No.
No?
No.
No, it depends what list you're on.
Yes, I mean, you're not going to make admiral unless you're on the general list. And you see, a lot of these chaps are seduced, these young ages, by saying, why didn't you come in for 3 years? That's the sort of thing that I'm against. I say, make up your mind. If you want to do it, go for it. Join the right list, thereby get the right training, because they get quite different training, and then you're on the trail to success, and those will be the future admirals, for the most part.
Because the other ones actually will be too old, won't they, to get onto the...
Well, you see, for a start, if you join... I mean, there are all sorts of different things now, and I don't want to flog about with them, but if you take the supplementary list, I forget, he has 7 or 9 or 10 years or something, some contract. Now, firstly, the Navy has appreciated he's only going to be there for a short time, so they're not going to waste that amount of time training him. If he's an aircrew, they'll train him to be an aircrew, and they won't give him a general background. Now, he then decides at the age of 25, wife, one child, that this is the way of life he enjoys, and he wants to stay in there. So, as a first move, he's got to get transferred onto the general list. That in itself is not easy, particularly in a declining Navy. So he's got to go up for boards and all sorts of things, and if he's lucky, he'll get transferred. Well, if he's a very able chap, he may jump over and get on perfectly well. But he's set himself already quite a difficult hurdle because his contemporaries have learnt navigation, they've learnt about the engines, they've learnt all sorts of things in their early training, which he hasn't learnt, is he? So he's got...
What about those people who come directly from the lower deck?
Well, they're all right. Their difficulties... I mean, most of them go on the supplementary, the special duties list.
Yes.
And then it is possible to get a transfer from the special duties to the general list. They're often, of course, extremely good, practical people. Their difficulties come when they are promoted to commander. Up to lieutenant commander and seagoing and so on, they're fine. Promoted to commander, frequently they cannot write. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's basic education at the end of the day. A commander's job may well, for instance, in the Ministry of Defence, comprise almost solely writing. And too often or very frequently a chap who's come up by that route, where after all he only has to have four O levels, he just hasn't got the educational standard to compete. I mean, let's not underestimate him. He's done jolly well to get up to that sort of level, but it's likely to get him by the throat for really going further up.
How far, I mean, you rejected earlier on, when I was asking you, you were saying, and I asked you, well, what are the, you had all sort of, among your contemporaries, and what background, you said, no, you wouldn't remember what the background was.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, you're saying something different now, aren't you? You're saying that if you're at special duties,
you
have quite a job there.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've joined the supplementary list, you're going to have some problems there.
Yeah.
What you need to do is join at the general list at whatever it is, 17-4 and 18-4, and go to Dartmouth and get on with it.
And if you can pick up a degree as part of that, that's good news. That's good news, because that broadens this base, this educational thing that I was talking about. So that must be a good thing. Or can be. I don't think it necessarily is, but it can be. Perhaps I'm really saying two quite different things. I'm sure that is the way to join if you're going to get to the top. What I'm saying is that when you're amongst chaps at my sort of level, one is not necessarily terribly conscious of how any individual
actually got
there. But several would be ex-Dartmouth, several would be the public school entry, which of course ran in parallel at that time. One or two would be turned over from national service, or one or two of those. And every now and again you get a supplement, or a... No, not a supplementary, it's an upper yardman, by distinction, you see, a chap who was picked out from a rating straight onto the general list at a young age. You get the odd one or two of those. My last commander was an upper yardman. My commander before him was a rather interesting case. When I was captain of the Fife, he'd gone up to petty officer. Special duties, general list transfer, and he is now a captain. So, you know, people get up to captain. Pretty rarely, I think, do they make flag officer. It happens, but not all that often.
Is that pattern liable to change? Because after all, we're getting at that sort of level, and we're actually even presumably at the brass hat level, it's already happening. The full-time Dartmouth will have disappeared. I mean,
they've long since disappeared. No, the opportunities are all there. It's a question of whether the chap has got the ability. And for the reason which I'm saying, you tend to get this chap who's gone through the present Dartmouth system as opposed to mine. He tends to come out on top, mainly because he's a brighter chap. You see, he was a two or three A-level man to get in, whereas, the special duties chap would be a four O-level. Well, by the nature of it, he's less likely to get there. And the supplementary list chap, likewise, is, I don't know what his, but I mean, again, he's operating at a lower educational level. And in my experience, this, at some point along the line, this tells. You might notice it for the first 10 years, whilst they're all in at the sort of lieutenant stage grafting away. Some people have a very practical turn of mind and are jolly good at it. But it's probably when they start to write that you separate the men from the boys.
Well, I mean, it always has been a problem, but it's obviously with a navy that's getting smaller in personnel point of view, at least no bigger. The great step from 2.5 to commander remains, isn't it? The the difficult step above all in the promotion race. How well do you think the selection at this level is in fact done?
I'm not sure that it is any longer such a great step, because I think proportionately quite a lot, you know, quite a high percentage now get through. And indeed, I think there was a time when we advertised that three quarters would get through. So I think the hurdle is relatively easier. I would suggest that each step is just more difficult than the one before it. And so I don't think one is much more tricky than another. So what was the second half of your question?
That partly solves it, of course, by the fact that at the time in which it was the great step.
Yes.
I've always felt this made a very great difficulty in the selection process.
Ah, the question of selection. I've always had immense faith in the selection process, and I think I'm speaking for most people on the grounds that if they didn't accept the promotion system, they probably wouldn't stay, if you didn't think it was right, and broadly speaking. I mean, clearly it has, it's open to opinion in the odd case, but I've always had immense faith in it. It has been my view that those who deserve promotion have got it, and then usually one or two who probably didn't. And whilst the errors lay on that side, that seemed to me to be fair enough. I believe now the promotion to Admiral has become a lot more difficult because we're just taking fewer people. And one is seeing, as has been in the press in the last 6 or 8 months, a lot of very good men going to the wall just because there aren't holes, but it's just the way it is.
And there, this is where luck plays a greater part, doesn't it? I mean, being in the job that you're doing, being one that turns out to give you the opportunities you need.
Yes, obviously, some of the jobs are better than others. I think the real starters, I mean, I've just jumped this hurdle when there were perhaps, I don't know, 12 or 15 people came into the jump, and maybe four jumped it. Two seamen, one supply, one engineer, I think. Some were much more likely than others. Of the seamen, I think probably of those, half were seamen, at least. And some of those, you could tell perfectly well, weren't in with a start, in with a hope. Because people have started right back in their captain's time. You're a captain for 9 years, I think it is. And they will have started in their first and second jobs, getting the right jobs. And then, of course, that continues. And so by the time you actually jump the hurdle, some people's pedigree looks right and others doesn't. And that's the way it is. You're streamed, really.
Yes.
I mean, it's not overt streaming in that sense, but, you're just being selected for jobs. For example, the IDC, the Royal College of Defence Studies, is it now, is a staff course done by captains. Well, I think I'm right in saying you couldn't get on that unless your last recommendation gave you a possibility of being an admiral. That isn't to say they get it. In fact, only about a third do, I think. But in a sense, there's sort of an element of streaming.
And if you haven't been able to do that course, then...
Well, and so on, and so it goes for the next. And having done that course, you're then likely to get a better job the other side of it, and so on.
There's obviously one of the great changes, isn't it? Is that in influence, you would say, plays very little part now.
Oh, yes.
You see, though, certainly before the First World War, mm-hmm. you said, and I think truly said, who you knew was more important than,
yes.
who you were, than who you were.
Yes. Simply not true anymore. Surprisingly, it is less so in our Navy than it is in the American Navy, in my opinion, where you might imagine it would be quite different. But I think they much more hang on some star and rise or fall with him.